Thanks for your attendance tonight. This is an important part of the process. Wildlife in Utah, managing the wildlife in Utah. So everybody's participation is very much appreciated. We'll go ahead and get started with some introductions. I'll start over here with Dan.
Microphone. Everybody's been recorded, by the way. Dan Potts with the non-consumptive interest.
George Garcia with the U.S. Forest Service.
Mike Christensen.
Ben Lauder, Public at Large.
Ken Strong, Sportsman's Rep.
A.J. Maurer, Agriculture.
Brock McMillan, Sportsman.
Joshua Leonard, Sportsman.
Mike Gates with the BLM.
All right. Thank you. My name is Chris Model. I represent Public at Large. I am the current co-chair, but chairing tonight. Our RAC chairman resigned. And so tonight we will be aware that we will be setting new chairs and co-chairs after the meeting. So be thinking about that. Before we get going, I want to go over the procedures just a little bit. I think most of you are familiar with the procedures, but just really quickly. What will happen is on each agenda item, the DWR will give their recommendations or their proposals. The RAC members will then have the opportunity to ask questions, and then the public will have the opportunity to ask questions. But please, no comments during the question period. Ask for questions only at that point. Please make sure if you come up to the mic to speak that you state your name. Please wait to be recognized. After the public has the opportunity to ask questions and those questions have been answered, then the public will have the opportunity to make any comments or statements. Please make sure you fill out the yellow cards that are in the back sitting on the table if you have any comments that you'd like to make, and bring it up to us so we make sure that we can recognize you and get you the time you need. Anybody recognizing an organization will get a maximum of 5 minutes, and anybody not representing an organization will get 3 minutes. And on a side note, we need to be out of this building by 10 o'clock tonight, so we very much appreciate everybody's questions and comments, both from the public and from the RAC members, but please be concise and on point, and let's get through this. It can be a big agenda sometimes with what we've got here. After the public makes their comments, it will come back to the RAC for comments and any motions to be made at that point. All right. Let's go ahead and get started, and let's go ahead and start with the approval of the agenda and the minutes. I have a motion for the minutes for the last meeting to approve and to...
I'll make a motion we approve the minutes of the last meeting.
All right, thank you, Ken. Got a second?
Because I like Ken, I'll second it.
All right, Danny seconds. All right, all in favor? Okay, it's unanimous. Thank you. Okay. At this point, we'll move on to the board meeting updates from the last board meeting. Go through those really quickly. I did not attend that board meeting, so I'm going to be reading some notes here from that meeting. If anybody has any comments or anything to add, please feel free to jump in.
All I have is the motions from that meeting.
So okay, where does it start? Right there. Okay, so the first agenda item was the 2018 Black Bear Recommendations and Rule Amendments. Motion was made to accept those recommendations as presented. Including a proposal from the Utah Houndsmen on the LaSalle and San Juan units, the fall season dates to be August 6th through November 16th, with hound hunting restrictions from August 18th through 24th and September 8th through 25th, and as well as October, any weapon general season and deer elk hunts at that time. There was also an additional motion to include the book cliffs in the original motion, and then both of those were struck down. And the division's recommendations were accepted on that item as presented. On the CWMU Advisory Committee appointments, the appointments were accepted as presented by the division. And that's it. So, short agenda there. Okay. Now I'll turn the time over to Jason for a regional update.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. A couple things that I'd just highlight real quick before we dive into the agenda. I don't want to take too much time. In our wildlife section, we've been pretty mild winter. There's not been a lot of depredation issues that our biologists, our technicians have had to deal with. Quite a bit of turkeys that we've been moving around out of towns, out of people's yards, and out into the wild populations. In our habitat section, we've been working, gearing up for the spring coming up. With the weather, they've been able to continue to put guzzlers in, quite a few guzzlers out on the West Mountains. These are primarily upland game guzzlers, but they do serve some for big game as well, for antelope and mule deer. For our law enforcement, they've been coming off of a kind of a quiet winter as well, finishing up case reports. A lot of trapping issues, trapping citations were issued, and they're finishing those up. And they're getting a lot of calls to go in and on deadheads right now and track those deadheads down as we start into the shed antler gathering season as well. In our aquatics, the aquatics have spent the last couple of weeks down in Yuba Reservoir collecting northern pike, collecting eggs and female, adult females. Those eggs will be used to create tiger muskie that will be transplanted throughout the region into different reservoirs and community fisheries. And they've started planting in those community fisheries at this time as well, so they're starting to ramp that up. And those are really kind of the highlights that I have. And unless the RAC members have any questions for anything going on in the region. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Thank you, Jason. Okay, let's go ahead and...
Chris, go ahead, Dan. I have two announcements quickly. I think it's pertinent to the RAC.
All right, go ahead, Dan.
The June Sucker Recovery Program is considering proposing harvest of channel catfish in Utah Lake so the commercial fishermen can sell those to continue to harvest common carp out of the lake. And then the other one is HB 272, which the governor signed, which would allow a developer to end up with all of the sovereign lands on the bottom of Utah Lake. And so those are two issues that we'll probably have to deal with down the road. So just wanted to get that out.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. Okay. We'll go ahead and jump right in here. The first item, I believe, is an informational item, use of air bows, Covey.
All right. They asked me to introduce this. We had a request to look at using air bows as a weapon in the state of Utah. Just a couple points. This is strictly informational only. There's no action that needs to be taken on this. And what the division really wanted to look at, we don't have a stance on this right now, so I just put that out there. What the division really wanted to look at is what is the public sentiment? How do people feel about this? And so when we were approached with this request, there's a process, and it's on the agenda, and I'll give a presentation now. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you, Cody. I guess everyone's behind me, but my name is Randy Graham. I'm representing a company called Shooting Edge, and we are here to talk not about the air bow, actually. The air bow is a branded product from Crossman. We're here to talk about a product that we have that actually shoots out of any air gun, It's an air bolt that shoots out of an air gun. I apologize for the glare on this. I hope you can see. But let me just jump into this. First of all, who are we in terms of Shooting Edge? We're a company that is looking to provide products for sportsmen and sportswomen that have been made for, field tested by other sportsmen and women. Our founder, who's sitting here, Marvin Carlston, if any of you are into archery, you probably have heard of him. He's the founder of Gold Tip. He sat twice on the ATA board as a member of the board, and he's been an innovator that's had a big impact on the archery industry, most notably the expandable broadhead. Through Gold Tip, really drove that into the marketplace, was responsible for getting that made a legal weapon here in Utah, and then also the carbon wrap shaft. The shaft that everybody uses today was introduced into the marketplace by Marvin. Today we have essentially three products that we're dealing with. The first one is an armored archery glove that is for the protection of an archer from a misfired arrow. Most people aren't aware, but there's very severe hand injuries that can take place from a misfired or a broken arrow. Another is black powder, an improved muzzleloader round that has higher velocity, better accuracy, and easier to load. And what we're here to talk about tonight is what we call the air bolt, which is a projectile that you shoot out of an air gun. We have various calibers for that, 25, 35, 45, and 50 calibers. So the air bolt itself, what it is it takes an air gun, which is a low velocity firing gun, which can easily punch a hole through a big game animal, but there's some question about its actual takedown capability. When you shoot one of these bolts from the air gun, it's more than capable of taking big game, and we've actually proven that multiple times on various types of big game. The speed of this is up to 500 feet per second, power over 238 foot-pounds of energy. That's more than any conventional archery device, whether a bow or a crossbow. In terms of accuracy, we can achieve one-inch groupings at 30 yards. Just to give you a little bit of history about air guns, back in the 1500s, the Ghirardoni was the first air rifle that was in use. They really came into their own in about 1780 when the Austrian army actually used these guns as their primary weapon. They were about 4 feet long, weighed about 10 pounds. You can't really see it in the picture, but there's a canister at the back end, and that would unscrew, and it would pump it full of air, screw it back on. It would hold 22 lead bullets, and it could shoot those about 1,000 feet per second. It was accurate up to about 100 yards. At the same time, the typical muzzleloader was only accurate to about 50 yards, and beyond that wasn't very effective. And this could, in less than 30 seconds, could shoot all 22 of those rounds. It was the weapon that was taken by Lewis and Clark when they went on their expedition. And because of that, anytime they would come in contact with a new tribe, they would introduce them to this weapon to try to set the stage for, you know, kind of peaceful interaction. But it has been said it was the single most influential weapon to open up the American West. Anyway, just a little bit of history on that. In terms of what we're looking for ultimately, we're looking to have the air gun with the use of an air bolt to be designated as an any legal weapon for big game hunting. You know, the reason we think that should be done is, number one, it's a very effective primitive weapon. Again, shooting that bolt out of the air gun is as or more effective than any archery type of weapon. It's a great starter type of gun for young hunters. It does not have the recoil or the noise that high-powered weapons do. Relatively light, relatively easy to use. When you're shooting a target, very easy to see where you're hitting. We think it's also an effective weapon for disabled hunters, even if it's used in as an illegal weapon. For those that have shoulder injuries, et cetera, unable to shoot a high-powered weapon, this is a weapon they'd be able to use. We believe it's a fun and safe weapon. Again, this is something that, because of the nature of the projectile, you could shoot this all day long at minimal cost, minimal physical impact, et cetera. And we believe it also have an impact on hunter retention. Again, for maybe some older hunters that no longer feel comfortable shooting a high power weapon, for hunters who want to go out in the firearm season but would like to have a more challenging hunt, closer hunt, this weapon is effective up to about 100 yards. So anyway, those are some of our thoughts on that. In terms of the potential concerns, there's a couple that we've heard. One of them, again, gets back to this issue, is this really capable of taking big game? I've got a little video that runs just a couple minutes. I'm hoping you can see it.
You want sound?
Yes, please.
Ryan, you can blow that up and stretch it?
No, it'll blow up itself. Do you know what? With the HDMI cord, I don't know that it's going to let us do sound. Sound's not really important. Yeah, I'm sorry. With the setup here, it's not going to allow us to do the sound. It doesn't matter. It'll just last a couple minutes, and you should be able to.
There might be some sound on there.
Testing now. We are going to do two groups, three shots each at 30 yards on target downrange. Got the gun aired up. We've removed the muzzle cap here just so you can see the loading process a little bit better. So we'll get the nock placed in there, twist up those vanes, and just push her on in. All right, let's see how she does.
Shame with the gun that I'm shooting on today's show is so effective Why in the world wouldn't it be considered a legal hunting device for big game animals anywhere?
Thank you. I apologize that you weren't able to see or hear that a little bit better, but anyway, what I was trying to demonstrate is that this is an effective tool, both in terms of accuracy, the force of the hit, and actual big game. The other thing that we've heard fairly consistently is concerns about excise tax, and there's some confusion on this in terms of this air bolt, air gun combination contributing to excise tax. In fact, the bolt today, whenever we produce these, we're paying 50 cents per shaft and then another 55 cents per tip, just as an arrow in the archery world would be. The air gun itself currently pays no tax. Our partners in this, a company called Pyramid Air, the largest distributor of air guns, is actively working to get these guns subject to the excise tax. We anticipate that taking a year, a couple of years, just to get through the process, but they are committed to making that happen. When used in hunting big games, we believe the arrows are going to be typically replaced on a fairly regular basis due to loss, due to damage, etc., and that will create recurring tax revenue. It's been determined, the ATA determined, that this was not archery equipment. We therefore believe it's most comparable to a primitive weapon such as a muzzleloader. Muzzleloaders are currently paying about 11% tax on the gun and zero on the bullets. Over time, with the use of these arrows, even before we get the excise tax on the guns themselves, the reuse of the arrows, the repurchase of the arrows, we believe over a period of 3 to 4 years will actually exceed what the tax would be on a typical muzzleloader. Oh. So that is our presentation. We're now available to take any questions that there might be. I can answer them, or from a technical standpoint, Marvin would be happy to answer those as well.
Yeah, lighting's a little bad.
Thank you for that presentation. Very, very interesting product, to be sure. Do you have any questions or comments from the rack? I've got a couple questions for you. So, what kind of demand have you seen from hunters for this type of product, either in Utah or in other states?
Well, for example, we put out one video last fall, and we have over 6 million views on it, so we've had a tremendous amount of interest in the product. We've demonstrated it at several events here, some archery events. We was up at the sportsman show, and literally everybody that came by, the reaction was, I've got to have one of those. So we've got very good positive reaction from the public, and more than positive reaction from the public out there looking at the videos. You've heard of the air bow that was out there, Jim Shockey. We have far exceeded his video with just our little simple demonstrations that we put on the web. So it's been pretty good.
And Marvin also mentioned Pyramid Air is sold out of our
company. Oh yeah, and also everything that we have produced, we've actually sold. We're actually sold out of product right now. We're in the process of delivering another 8,000 arrows to be shot out of the air guns. And all the major air gun manufacturers are tooling up to produce guns that will shoot these arrows.
Okay. Thank you. Got another question for you. So what type of, for games specifically, what kind of broadheads can those handle? As far as weight, size, et cetera?
Well, they'll shoot virtually any weight of broadhead. The arrow, the shaft itself is strong enough, and it's supported in the barrel with the design we have. So even a soft-spined arrow will still shoot a broadhead reasonably well. It is shooting at higher velocities, so there are some broadheads that don't work as good as others. We're actually in the development of some broadheads that were really specifically designed for this. We call it a drafting technology that shoots pinpoint with the field points.
Okay, great. Any other? Go ahead, Ken.
How do you fill the air in it?
It can be pumped in with a hand pump. It looks a lot like a bicycle pump. There's also electric high-pressure pumps that you can purchase and then store the air in canisters for a quick refill. It takes about 15 strokes of a hand pump per shot to repump up your gun, so it gives you a little bit of workout. But the a canister, you can fill a gun in literally a few seconds.
How many shots do you get?
Well, the question here is how many shots can you get out of the gun? Typically about 20 shots out of the one that you saw on the video before it needs to be recharged.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right. Thanks, gentlemen. We appreciate the presentation. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next agenda item. And it's everybody's favorite, the Bucks, Bowls, and once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. Covey, you're up again.
Yeah. Let me pull this up. Should be on that. Let me get the right source now. There we go.
Scott, it's not. I don't see it here.
Might have one bad corner there. You found it yet?
Mm-mm.
No one there that Stacy sent. 3 out of 4.
She sent them today. She sent them today.
That's CWMU poaching. Boy, that's not good. Airbolt.
I got it.
Yeah, why don't you go grab it? I don't see it. Sent me that air bolt. Should be right there. Okay. So there's that video. GWMU, but that's not it. Oh, I got 3 out of 4.
At least we're not 5 on the back.
Right.
Have your email? Can you get your email there?
Get it on my phone. I want to see if I even got it. Okay. Stacy, 3 out of 4. Yeah, see, it's not there.
Yeah, she sent the fourth one later.
She sent it later. There's a media one in people, but that was the video. When did she send it?
She didn't send it.
Hey, Cody, Stacy didn't send it. Okay. I'll rough her up a little bit.
That's fine. You got
like that too much, Ben.
Everybody seems to relax. We're good.
It's only the biggest topic, right? Not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
I just assumed it was part of that CWMU one or something, so I apologize.
Don't worry about it. We're good. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for being patient. My name is Colby Jones. I'm here to go over the 2018 Bucks and Bulls once-in-a-lifetime recommendations. So start with the general season deer and limited entry deer permit recommendations. So general season buck deer harvest. I think it's important to note here that the last 3 years have been great with peaking buck deer harvest in 2016. But still, 2017 was a great year for deer hunters in recent history. Just to keep it in perspective, 2016 we harvested 31,000 buck deer, and in 2017 with 89,000 hunters, fewer hunters, we still harvested almost 30,000 deer, 29,900. Looking at buck doe ratios, if you look at the graph here on the x-axis are the years, and on the y-axis are bucks per 100 does. So when we look back in time, we managed for a lot lower buck doe ratios. More recently, managing public demand, we've managed for a lot higher there. So in more recent history, we have two different types of units in the state, those that are managed for 15 to 17 and those that are managed for 18 to 20. And still, on a statewide perspective, there are a lot of bucks out there. We're at the very top end of what the goal is. And I just think it's important to keep in perspective that this is only on, when we do this, we exclude the lands that are primarily private too. So this is for primarily public lands across the state. Our buck doe ratios are right there at the top of the objective. Taking a quick look at fawn production trends, there on the left again, fawns per 100 does, and across the bottom are our years. The last 2 years we've hovered right below that 60 fawns per 100 does. That's a pretty important number west-wide. We like to be at about at least 60, and we're just slightly below. A quick overview of deer permit recommendations. In 2017, we had 89,050 permits. And for 2018, we're recommending a slight increase to 91,050, an increase of 2,000 permits. This is one of the byproducts of unit-by-unit management. We're allowed to cut permits where we need to cut permits, and then where we have the ability to have more opportunity and allow more hunters out there, we can do that. And it's really, that's a great thing. So just an overall view, no change on 13 units, an increase on 10 units where we have the ability to do that, and then a decrease on 6 units in order to get back to what we've agreed to manage to with the public. We'll go through this by region. If you look at the left side of the slide, we have the unit. This is starting with the northern regions. We have the unit followed by the objective, so bucks per 100 does that we're looking to manage to, and then 3 years of what our counts were for bucks per 100 does, what our ratios were, and then the 3-year average. And the next column, the next to last column as we go left to right, were what the permits were in 2017, and then followed by the 2018 recommendation. Green is just an indicator that we're exceeding the objective on the 3-year average, or that we're recommending an increase on permits. So if you look at this across the top, then the Chalk Creek, East Canyon, Morgan South, Rich, we're recommending an increase there. And this is, we haven't recommended an increase there for years, and the reason why is because there are very few public lands on this unit. But we added another rifle season, and so with movements and animals not being at the same same place at the same time of year, we feel like we have the ability to offer a little bit more opportunity there and hopefully manage to that 18 to 20, which is what we've agreed to do. We added that early rifle hunt also on the Camas and recommended an increase there as well. Out west on the Box Elder, we're exceeding the three-year average, and so we're recommending a slight increase there. Overall, I recommend an increase to 26,100 in the northern region. It's a 2,300 permit increase or 10% region-wide. Moving to the central region, if we look at the changes there, the ochre Stansberries, we're exceeding the buck-doe ratio objective there, and we're recommending a slight increase. And that's the only increase in the region for an overall increase, recommended increase of 100 permits or about 1%, actually less. But taking a look at the southern region, I didn't mention before, but where green is an indication that we're recommending an increase or exceeding the objectives, yellow is an indication that we're recommending a decrease or below the objectives. On the beaver, slightly above, however, there's a downward trend there, so we're recommending we stay the same. On the Fillmore, a slight increase there, so we're still exceeding that. On the Monroe, where last year we dropped below, although we're within on the three-year average, we can see we do take into account trend, and we're taking into account that trend and recommending a decrease in permits there. Mount Dutton, no change. And then on the Pine Valley, again, above the three-year average and recommending an increase in permits there. The Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, slightly below and recommending a small decrease. The southern region continued. The Plateau Fish Lake last year came in below, although the average is still within. We're taking into account trend and recommending a decrease there. And Plateau Thousand Lakes. And this unit looks, I guess, funny. It's a small unit, and so it's harder to manage. But 300 permits is about what works on that unit. The Southwest Desert, again, above objective and recommending an increase there. And the Zion, recommending an increase there. We do have some of those early seasons, again, on the Plateau Fish Lake and the Zion. So that's the additional rifle season that we approved in the fall. Under the Southeast region, on the 9 Mile, the 9 Mile is an interesting unit. Again, the 9 Mile has a lot of private land. It's reverse of what a lot of the other areas in Utah are, where when you head up in elevation, you run into National Forest. The 9 Mile is public land on the bottom and private land on the top. And we haven't recommended an increase there for a long time for the same reason we haven't on the Chalk Creek. But with the addition of that other rifle season, we hope to be able to catch some of those bucks in other areas and provide some opportunity there. Central Mountains Manti, still within there, even though this last year did have a dip, we've had good fawn survival and recruitment, and we feel like we'll have the ability to have a great hunt there as well this year and be okay maintaining that. It's important to note that last year on the Manti, we did take a big cut in permits, although that doesn't show up here. On the LaSalle's, dropped below, and the three-year average is right there at the bottom, and so we're recommending a decrease in permits there. And then on the San Juan, you see the San Juan is it's exceeding both annually and exceeding this year's three-year average. One of the things that I didn't mention in Brock here, you know, we do take into account other things, and we do watch deer survival, fawn survival. We look at what bucks are going to be coming into the population. And on the San Juan, this is really an interesting situation. We don't look at this winter and think about it as a hard winter for wildlife. We're learning more and more about these populations. It appears that the San Juan is extremely dependent on those fall monsoons, and they didn't get it this year. From the collared fawns we have right now, we're currently at about 13% survival.
Seven.
Seven. It just dropped again. So most recently, we dropped again. 7% survival. Just to put that into perspective, last year on the cache with a moderate to severe winter, more severe winter, I guess I should say, we were at 10% survival. So it appears that a heavy winter up north, that lack of monsoonal moisture down south can be as detrimental as a heavy winter up north. So we're taking that into account, and that's why you don't see an increase there. Overall, for the southeast region, a 50 permit increase recommendation, it's less than 1%. On the north slope, with the downward trend there, a slight decrease, as well as a decrease. There's a steep downward trend on Wasatch Mountains East. This unit, when the buck-doe ratio increased there, the biologist was aggressive and really increased permits. And so as that goes back down, he's trying to stay ahead of the trend and recommend a decrease there. And south slope bonanza vernal, where we're exceeding the objective, we're recommending an increase. Overall net decrease in the northeastern region of 250 permits. On to premium limited entry units. Premium limited entry units, as long as 40% of the harvested bucks are at least 5 years of age or older, when we rewrote the statewide plan, we agreed that as long as 40% of those bucks were that age or older, that we would leave permits alone. So there's no top end on that. There's no threshold to increase permits. And what we said is that we would manage buck doe ratios with management permits at that time. We would adjust those, but leave the quality of the trophy permits alone. Both the Ponsagant and the Henry Mountains are exceeding that, and so there's no recommended change in those permits. With the declining trend on the Henry Mountains, we are recommending a slight decrease in permits on the Henry Mountains for management bucks. You can see that on the left, again, the unit, the objective, 40 to 55, and then the Henry's is the top one there, 65, 47, 41. Again, within the range, declining trend. We approved the Ponsagant cactus buck hunt last fall, and we're recommending 14 permits for that hunt. On the limited entry deer permit recommendations, on the left, the objective, the unit, then the objective, followed by the last 3 years classification, the three-year average, last year's permits, and this year's recommendations. On the book cliffs, we're within the objective, the unit's doing well, and it appears that we have the ability to offer some more opportunity there, so we're recommending a slight increase in permits there. The decrease on the North Slope Summit, you know, we brought this hunt back. We had it one time, we brought it back, and the experience, as we go back through and read the experience for 200 hunters, we just realized we were over-allocating permits to this. And so we're recommending that reduction there. And then on the West Desert Vernon, where we have more opportunity there, we're recommending an increase as well. Overall, there's a net decrease in limited entry permits, with the majority of that coming out of the North Slope Summit. For the late season limited entry muzzleloader permit recommendations, you remember this was really controversial this last fall. When we brought this around, and proposed it on all units. And when that went to the board, they actually decided to not accept that recommendation. They requested that we bring it, and then after hearing public sentiment that the public didn't want it that way, and it was contrary to the plan. So we went back to what the plan said, and that is units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, so the high-end units, and then exceeding those. And it's based on the previous year's classification data. So on the Beaver, it's a new hunt there, we're recommending 5 permits. And then on the North Slope, a new hunt there, recommending 5 permits. The rest of those were all in place this last year, and permits are the same. We're recommending to remove the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, or we removed the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz because, again, the board went with the plan, and that removed that hunt. And with the declining trend on the Wasatch Mountains East, we're recommending a reduction in those permits as well, from 35 to 30. For an overall increase, 167 was 2017. We're recommending 172 permits statewide on those. So just to as a summary here, our recommending increase is in archery, muzzleloader, multi-season, and late muzzleloader, but with the majority of the decrease coming from that North Slope summit hunt, recommending a decrease in rifle permits and then an overall decrease in total permits by 38. On the general season limited entry elk permit recommendations, the spike bull and any bull permits are set in the statewide plan. As long as the success rates on the 2017, as long as they're below 20%, the recommendation stays the same, and they were at 11% last year. And proposing 500 youth any bull. Just an overview of the limited entry elk permit recommendations by weapon type. And we're recommending a slight increase there. And then we'll break this down by age objective. So on the left is the unit that we're managing, and then 3 years of age data from that unit. So the harvested bulls, we age all of those bulls, all the teeth that we get, and then determine where we're at or what harvest looks like. Take the three-year average into account, and then there's last year's permits and this year's recommendation. So with the beaver, with an upward trend there, we're recommending a slight increase of 2 permits. On the book list, is with a downward trend, and then it being just below the objective, we're recommending a decrease there. And the West Desert Deep Creek, I think you remember this objective was changed in the statewide plan. And last year we cut this pretty heavily. We cut it by 15 permits. It was about 40. We dropped down to 25, and now we're recommending another decrease, a slight decrease, to get that to the age objective as quickly as we can. You won't see another recommended decrease on that unit. This should accomplish what we need to accomplish. We'll ride that out. An overall decrease on the upper end, the units that are managed for 7.5 to 8, an overall decrease there, 12 permits. The 6.5 to 7, the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek, right there. This last year we came in a little lower, and so we're recommending to stay the status quo there. The Cache South, recommending a decrease there. And this is another unit that was changed in the statewide plan. Central Mountains Nebo, we took a big decrease there over the last couple years, and so we'd like to see what that does or where we end up before we decrease any more opportunity there. On the Monroe, we're still above on our three-year average and recommending a slight increase there. Mount Dutton, we came in below the unit objective and recommending a decrease. Panguitch Lake is also below and we're recommending a decrease. On the South Slope Diamond Mountain, we're slightly above, but very, very close, and we'd like to see what that does. So we're recommending to stay the same there. And then Southwest Desert, we're recommending a slight increase there as it's important to know, I guess, on the Southwest, as I should mention this, this unit was quite a bit higher a few years ago. I don't remember the exact number. We pulled that out, but it was quite a bit higher, and we had a pretty good decrease there, and I feel like there's more opportunity out there. On the units that are managed for 5.5 to 6, Central Mountains Manti, this unit is so often at the very top of the objective, and it's actually exceeding the objective on the three-year average. There's opportunity to be had there, and we're recommending an increase there. LaSalle Mountains, recommending an increase there as well. 9 Mile Anthro, a very slight increase. This is a very small unit. And on the small units, we tend to have a lot of bounce in the ages. North Slope Three Corners. It's below the objective and recommending a decrease. Oker Stansbury also below and recommending a decrease. Plateau Fish Lake, we're hovering, and we have hovered right there around the top end of the objective. We have the ability to offer some more opportunity there, and that's the rationale for that increase. And the Wasatch Mountains, again, that unit is exceeding the objective that it's managed for, and we have the ability to offer opportunity and still manage what we've agreed to with the public, and we're recommending that increase. For an overall recommended increase of 80 permits on the 5.5 to 6, or about 5%. Under our 4.5 to 5-year-old units, Box Elder Grouse Creek, again exceeding and recommending an increase of 2 permits. Pilot Mountain, exceeding and recommending an increase of 4 permits there. And Cache North, coming in below there and just recommending a very slight decrease. Overall net increase on these units, 5 permits. Onto our 2018 limited entry pronghorn permit recommendations. We're recommending a pretty good increase in pronghorn. And the rationale, I guess I should say, I don't know if everybody remembers when we brought the new pronghorn plan before the RACs last year. And we're switching in pronghorn from a buck-doe ratio to an age-based management. When we looked into this last year, we realized we were probably leaving a lot of opportunity for pronghorn on the table. We realized a couple things. One, pronghorn, they don't put on a lot. They're not elk and they're not deer. You know, they don't put on a lot of growth as they get older. At about that 2-year-old, 3-year-old is about as big as a pronghorn will ever get. Last time we did ages on pronghorn in the state, 2008 and 2009, we aged about 700 animals. And at that time, the average pronghorn we were harvesting was 3.8 years old on average, so almost 4 years old. West-wide in unhunted populations, pronghorn tend to have high mortality. So a lot of the bucks die naturally, predation, other things. And so you're losing a lot to nature. And if you wait for them to get older, it's about 75% survival. So about 25% of your bucks die annually. So if you wait 2 years from a 2-year-old to a 4-year-old, you're losing all that opportunity. And they're a pronghorn, they're a buck pronghorn, they're 2 years old. So a lot of this increase is as we switch to age-based management. We don't have that data yet. We have the data from 2008 and 2009, and we've maintained similar harvests since then and grown pronghorn populations. So if anything, the age would have increased. But this will help us break into that new age-based management system, and that's the rationale for that increase. Our once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. On moose, we lowered the age objective on moose as well and realized we probably have some more opportunity out there to harvest moose. On bison, recommending an increase there. Both the Book Cliffs and the Henry Mountains had increases. The bison archery-only permits, these are only on the Henry Mountains, and recommending an increase there. For desert bighorn sheep, just a slight increase. On Rockies, we did have, there's a couple reasons for that increase there. One, we have a new hunt on the Oak Creeks. And the other rationale for that increase is when we went out and caught sheep this year on the Newfoundland Mountains, at the end of the capture, we had a really hard time finding ewes. There were a lot of rams on the mountain. And the other thing is that the rams and ewes that we brought in had pretty poor body condition. It looked like it was very apparent that we were running into some density dependence, and it's probably a good idea to, first of all, bring those ram to ewe ratios back into check, and second of all, reduce some of those densities, and that sheep population will do better. For mountain goats, we also have a new hunt there, which is exciting. That'll be the LaSalle Mountains. And then we're recommending an increase for the archery-only permits for mountain goats, and that's a hunt in the UNS. And with that, I'll take any questions. Just as a reminder, if there are statewide questions, I'll do my best to answer those. If there are unit-specific questions or regional questions, the region's here and would love to take those. Right, Rusty?
Hey, RAC members, any questions?
I got one, Covey. We have 500 youth permits. In a recent study that was just completed nationwide, we're down to 4.9 youth percent of our youth that are getting involved in hunting and fishing. We're even lower than that in Utah. Would there ever be a possibility of moving some of these antlerless permits to youth? I mean, I know people complain all the time that we're doing too much for the youth. But according to this survey that they did, if we don't keep the retention going by 2050, there'll be no hunting or fishing in the country, and there won't be any money that from the Robertson-Pittman Act. You know, it's kind of a long story, but it's a big concern to me.
First of all, Ken, I hope to live and hunt and fish till at least 2050, maybe longer. But no, I understand that. It's a delicate balance. It's a delicate balance of offering up youth-only opportunity, which we do here, and still youth have the ability to put into the regular draw and hunt there as well. For general season deer, there's a portion of those permits that are set aside just for youth and taken right off the top. I struggle with this same thing, Ken. Like, I don't have a great answer. Honestly, I don't have a great answer. I have a son who, you know, last year didn't draw a tag. Well, he drew an archery tag, which you can buy over the counter for general season deer. But I'm in that same boat. I don't have a good answer. There's only so much opportunity and a lot of applicants and only so much space. I think the concern about providing more in the... These youth elk permits are pretty highly concentrated. There are not a lot of areas. We've chosen a different system in Utah. No, the majority of our units in Utah are limited entry for elk, and so there aren't a lot of areas with that are any bull. And the areas that are typically have lower elk densities. And so adding additional permits onto those would probably impact what we could offer otherwise.
All right, thank you, Colin.
That's a really bad answer.
Any other questions?
I have a couple questions. Covey, you started by saying where we have the ability to provide more opportunity, we try to do that.
Agreed.
And then you said on Thousand Lakes, 300 permits is about all we can do. What does that mean? Why? Because it's way over objective. What does it mean that that's all we can do?
Brock, I wish I could speak to the dynamics of that unit a little better, and I'll do my best here. But it's really small, and because of that, the buck doe ratios they really bounce. You know, some years it comes in and way exceeds, other years it comes in close to where it should, or it's because of the size, the sentiment is that 300 feels overcrowded. If they could, they would like a reduction, and we push to have that 300. But I get the concern there. When you see the overall three-year average being so high, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I personally don't have a lot of intimate knowledge of that unit, but I would love to get it and get back with you.
You made a similar comment for one of the limited entry hunts, North Slope Summit. And that one's way over objective, too. Or no objective, nothing's in there, but you cut permits by half. So what's the reasoning there, too?
On that limited entry permit?
Yeah.
They were undersubscribed. That's one of the reasons they went undersubscribed. It was a limited entry opportunity that individuals just, they didn't want. And a lot of the individuals that got the permit turned them back in which creates more chaos and actually less opportunity because of the way that the licensing system works. So what we're trying to do is match the demand there with what it is. So.
Okay. Last question for right now. When you put the late season hunts up, you put Monroe's at 5, and then you said this is for units managed for 18 to 20 that are over objective in the last year, but Monroe was 13.6 last year. So I'm trying to understand why it's still getting late seasons.
No, that's a great question. So the recommendation this fall will be to remove that, Brock, because it goes off the previous years. I should have been, so it's actually 2 years. Because when we recommend hunts in the fall, all we have is the 2016 classification. So I hope that clarifies things. Those
copy
late
that.
Season. Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, regarding the deer, how much do you find the bucks outcompete the does and fawns for browse? I'm not talking about the deer and other species, but you talk about like the cache being that hard winter, and there was the fawn mortality. We were talking about the 7% drop for fawns and this other because they didn't get the fall monsoon. So I guess my question is, does it make sense to kill more bucks on this and fewer does so that, like now, so that 3 years from now, that 7% fawn survival rate is stronger, is higher?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, when you look at this completely biologically, increased buck doe ratios can have a negative impact on the population. I can say that. And there's definitely literature that says that. There's some studies from Colorado. But I don't know how to quantify that.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Covey, I'm looking at the excuse me at the Wasatch Mountains elk permit numbers. We're still over objective, especially in the 3 year. But we saw a drop in the average age last year from 6.7 to 6.4, which is probably the biggest drop I've seen on the Wasatch. I mean, that unit's chronically over objective. I get that. But with that drop, and considering that we take into account trends, is it still appropriate to have that increase on that unit?
Ben, I think that's a good question. The short answer is yes. We're still significantly above, you know, half a year above what we're managing for. And you know, we can be anywhere from 5.5 to 6. So when you look at it, we could be up to almost a year above what we're managing for. I don't have a good answer on the Wasatch, but I love that it can provide this kind of opportunity.
Absolutely. So what are we, 3 years into the collar study?
Uh-huh.
There we three.
Three. When we start at 20, Kent, four.
Four years
into the elk collar study up there. Yeah.
Have we learned anything yet? I mean, the Wasatch is kind of its own deal, right?
We learned some really cool things.
So. You look at the Wasatch compared to the Manti, which is our biggest herd in the state, and the tag numbers, it just doesn't add up, right? It's just weird.
Yeah.
So what are we learning with that collar study? Have we learned anything to help us understand why this is?
So Ken will be the first to tell you I'm not very good with numbers, but what I can tell you is it appears that there's probably some immigration of some bulls coming from the South Slope on tribal lands up onto the Wasatch. I don't feel like we have that completely nailed down, but it feels like there's probably a surplus. Maybe they look up at the Strawberry Valley and think that looks good and head up there. That population in that area, the tribe doesn't do a lot of population control. They don't harvest many cows. They don't harvest a lot of elk. And so they have to go somewhere. And we did collar a few spikes in that area, and they did come up onto the Wasatch. So it appears that we're getting elk from that unit. It doesn't appear like there's many elk coming from the Nebo, the Manti, or East Canyon area. It feels like those are pretty solid barriers. Like, elk don't like to cross six much. It happens.
Sure.
But not many of our collared animals.
So the elk that you're talking about that are migrating onto the unit from the reservation in the South Slope is because they're just at capacity in their range there, and they're needing a place to go. Is that what I'm hearing you say? Or is it seasonal?
It appears that way. I mean, probably is what I would say. Like, yeah. I think we all were trying to figure out what was going on with the Wasatch. How can this sustain this? How can it do this? And still look like it does and still provide... I hear sometimes there's, we're losing quality, and I just personally haven't seen it yet. There are a lot of good bulls still coming off the Wasatch, and we're exceeding that age objective.
How's our hunter satisfaction doing on the Wasatch? Is still pretty good?
Still, Ken, do you have that right there? Bill, do you have that memorized? Hunter satisfaction on the Wasatch for elk. You know, one more thing, Ben, too, while they're looking that up, is that we did put that mid-season hunt on the Wasatch. So not all these are an increase in that early rifle, that rut hunt. So
sure.
Some of these will go into that. And,
yeah, and I noticed we're increasing tags on that October season. I think I noticed on the Wasatch and on the Manti.
And the Manti as well.
Which,
yeah.
I read into that hunt must be going well. We're getting good feedback. Is that true?
We haven't got a lot of bad feedback. It's not. It appears that people are putting in for it.
Cool.
I like that.
We got it.
What is it, Bill?
For most of the hunters, it's running anywhere from 3 to 4.
3 to 4. Okay. Relatively happy.
Sure. And are we seeing a good return of teeth for figuring out our age on that unit? Are we seeing?
On these larger units, that's not usually a problem at all. I don't know what the exact number is of teeth that we age there, but there's quite a few people in this room that would know that. Randy, what's the exact number of teeth we aged on the Wasatch?
Several hundred.
Yeah. Okay, did you catch that? The return rate on elk was lower across the state than it has been in past years, but still several hundred elk aged on the Wasatch.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Oh, Kobe, I have a question for you. On the limited entry deer permits, looks like your three-year average for West Desert Vernon was similar to some other units, yet that West Desert Vernon unit got a 13 permit increase and the other unit stayed the same. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so in some of this, you know, we only show 1 year previous, and that's South Slope Diamond Mountain had an increase 2 years ago, and so they're seeing what that does. San Juan, Elk Ridge, again, that area of the state was hit by some, that general area of the state was hit by some drought. And so, yeah, there are unit by unit reasons. But West Desert Vernon came in really good this last year. So it's exceeding on the overall 3-year average, but then this last year we went out and did the classification after harvest. There were a lot of bucks out there, so a lot of opportunity still in the landscape.
Does that have anything to do with the public land projects that are happening out there between BLM and the Forest Service?
I sure hope so. Keep it up.
Mike, did you have a question?
Yeah. So I was looking at the 456 Morgan Cache Southridge general deer units.
So in the northern region?
Yeah. So, and that's you have a 1,700 permit increase.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the buck-to-doe ratio since 2015 has fallen by 13 bucks per 100 does. And the population has fallen from around 18,000 overall to an estimated 14,000 on the Morgan Southridge unit. I know that that's a private lands unit, and so I worry that 1,700 permit increase is going to, most of that pressure will be placed on the limited public lands in that area. Is that a normal increase in permits when the herd drops by 4,000 animals out of 18,000.
You know, I think it's a valid concern. You know, and again, I don't. It's hard for me to speak to specific units exactly.
Yeah.
When it's not my unit, but I'll try to answer it as best I can. You know, a lot of that drop was the hard winter last year.
Mm-hmm, yes.
This year, we've had a really good fawn survival. We'll have a great buck crop coming into that, and it's a general season, an opportunity unit.
Yeah.
And I think we're hoping to take advantage of a lot of that, Mike. And then the other thing is, I would agree with you. And for years and years, we haven't increased permits on that unit because it is primarily private lands. I think the hope is that we're... The recommendation, the way of this broke up, is to put 20% of the permits, overall permits, into that early season rifle. So instead of being 20-20-60, it'll be 20-20-20-40. And we're hoping to catch some of those deer when they're in different places at different times of the year. Is it a regular increase? I don't know the answer to that, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, no, I appreciate that answer. And just for the record, I am all about getting kids out and opportunity, as long as it's not at the expense of what we're trying to manage.
Absolutely. You know, and I think one of the great things about this is you're right, there's a drop there. I think I look at it differently, though. I look at it as we're still 25 bucks per 100 does last year. We're still way over.
But the concern, and this is one of the only units that the only public input I got was,
sure,
people concerned about this unit, and you have a large escapement there with the amount of private lands.
Yeah, you're right.
And so if the public land herd is down in the 12s, but the private land herd is up in the 30s, then when we count, we get an average of 24, and then we're going to put all that pressure on the public land. So that was just the concern.
That's a valid concern.
Ken?
Yeah, Colby. On the Central Mountains Manti San Rafael on the deer, in 2015 we had 23.4. It dropped down by 8. In 2016 it dropped down again. In 2017 we still have an average of 17.4. But then next year we lose that 23.4. Which, depending on if we have a fantastic year or not this year, it's going to drop the buck doe average below our objective. Is that a concern at all?
Ken, it is. We talked about this one a lot. What do we want to do with this? Where do we want to go with this last year coming in lower? Again, we took into account other things, though, too, and we did look at fawn survival on this unit, especially those were fat, good fawn survival. We'll have a great yearling crop, and also we did cut permits here last year, so we recommended a decrease in permits here last year, and we said, okay, so if we recommended a decrease last year, we've got good fawn survival this year, let's see what happens. That's where we went with this one.
I just wanted to ask, Kobe, I see you're raising the bull elk permits around the reservation, those at Deep Creek, by 20. What's the purpose for that? Did I see that correctly, or did I read that wrong?
We were at 25 last year, Jacob. We're recommending a decrease to 20, so we're reckoning a 5.
You're decreasing it or increasing it?
Decreasing.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. So
yeah, and Jacob, one of the reasons when we rewrote the statewide plan, I remember meeting with the tribe, and we were managing for two different things there on the same population, and what we decided is we wanted to work collaboratively, words are hard too, with the tribe to manage that, and so we're trying to come into it the same age objective or that you would manage for, and so we are recommending another decrease there.
Okay.
Mike?
Got another question. So within the mule deer management plan, what's the level of increase that a limited entry unit can see? Is it up to 10% increase, or is there not a cap on the...
I can't remember how that part's written. Is there a cap on that? There's no cap on that.
There's no cap. And like the West Desert unit, a lot of bucks out there. Deer herd's doing good. We're well above our 25 to 35. Is 194 enough? Could it handle more?
Tom, if you're going to talk, you have to come to the mic.
This is sorry, Tom.
Unit. This is a good unit question for Tom.
So, yeah, I think it can handle more. And that's the short answer. But this rack has approved the increases the last few years I've added it, but it doesn't seem to carry through to the board. And so there's been more different public showing up at the board meetings and expressing their concerns, and it doesn't pass. So trying to do it in small increments just to get the ball rolling, and hopefully we'll eventually get to where it should be.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. I'm very supportive of your efforts, and
The rack has been, too, and I surely appreciate it. But there are other publics out there that don't come to this rack that evidently... And some of the other racks didn't pass it last year, and that carried through to the board, and so they acted according to what they saw. So.
Okay. That means I won't recommend even more than you have.
Well, the thing that kind of shook it up a little bit this year when I was looking at it was the muzzleloader success rate. It kind of dropped it a little bit, so I increased it more, but to stay within some parameters, I had to look at all of the success rates, and they were a little bit different this year than they usually were. So it's one of those years like we had 2 years ago. The muzzleloaders didn't do very well, but everybody else did for some reason. And so that was taken into account.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. Do we have any questions from the public? Anyone? Okay. We'll go ahead and move into our comment portion. I've only got one card for this, which has got to be a record somewhere for this particular agenda item, but Chris Carling. Okay. Nah, don't worry about it. It's okay.
There is one additional comment I'm bringing up to you.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
My name is Chris Carling. I'm with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, SFW. And just as a quick and brief background, SFW represents between 6,800 and 7,800 members throughout the state of Utah, among 17 chapters spread throughout counties and regions, all regions of the state. We meet regularly with the leaders of those chapters, and what we discuss are these very things. It's very, very important to us. We're passionate like the rest of you are, and the leaders of our chapters are among the most active outdoorsmen that I know of, and we take their comments and passions very seriously. So in general, SFW supports the recommendations that the division has presented, as presented, with two exceptions. One of them on the Manti deer permits. We see that as one unit. We know it's managed that way. But the south end of that unit, as far as deer goes, is a drastically different operation in a way. And I know that the biologists have heard this, but our guys are seeing lower numbers and poor quality deer. And they just are asking that 250 fewer deer tags on the Manti be be issued than is recommended. It's hard because we know that's a unit that in the north they have a lot of success, a lot of deer numbers. In the south, it's just not the same situation. I don't know if in the future it might be managed as two separate units. It might be worth considering, but the recommendation there is that you do consider reducing the tags on that unit by 250 in order to help that southern portion of the deer herd. In addition, we also recommend that on, and I'm gonna name a few of these units, on the Pine Valley deer, the Southwest Desert deer, the Fish Lake and Monroe elk, and the Manti elk, that those permit numbers remain the same this year as they were last year. Our membership feels strongly that those herds cannot sustain those types of increases. So again, just reverting back to the same numbers on those units as last year. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, can you read those units again on the yes. units you want to keep?
I will. The Pine Valley deer, the Southwest Desert deer, and then for elk, it's the Fish Lake, Monroe, and Manti. We're asking that those units' permit numbers remain the same.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Thank you all.
All right. Next up, we have Greg Bird.
Hi, I'm Greg Bird with Utah Wild Sheep. We do agree with the division's recommendations for all bighorn hunts, except for the Wasatch Rocky Mountain bighorn hunt. We would recommend that there would be no tag increases due to the fear that there could be, with these combined units, some undue pressure, particularly on this Wasatch face. These sheep get really vulnerable in November, and the Avena Quinaria has proven to be a fairly difficult hunt as recent. This whole sheep herd complex is still struggling and in the rebuilding program from a disease die-off. So with the three proposed permits, plus the one tribal permit, plus the possibility of a sportsman's and statewide tag hunter possibly hunting this unit, there are just not that many particularly mature rams on this unit to warrant this increase. So we would recommend no increase on this unit and stay with the last year's recommendations to ensure that this particular part of the Wasatch doesn't get over-harvested in one possible year. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Okay, any other comment cards to be handed in? No? All right, thanks. Okay, RAC members, back to you for comments.
Can I ask Covey a question? Where'd Covey? Oh, he's right there. SFW is asking for 250 less permits on the Manti deer unit. As I look at those numbers, there's a very steep downtrend in buck to doe, the buck to doe ratio. Curious why we're not taking that into account and recommending a decrease in tags.
Yeah,
we're still in that objective. Well, actually, on the 3-year, we're still slightly over objective. But man, as I look at the trend on the 3-year, we went from 23 to 13. I'm surprised we're not taking that trend into account.
I understand that, Ben. I think I probably could answer this question, but I think Rusty's probably more well versed to answer that. Is that okay if Rusty answers it? Well, he's coming up. I know that they mentioned that managing the units is two separate units. We actually sent out a survey on that to hunters, and I don't have the results here, but I do remember the results, and it was overwhelmingly no. We do not want you to manage that unit as two separate units. So we did ask hunters what they want on that. The truth is, when we catch deer down there in the south, all the does are pregnant. This isn't a too few bucks issue. There are fewer deer, and bucks on the south end of the unit. That's true. But anyway.
Thanks, Kobe.
Betsy Robinson, district biologist. Great question, Dan. With regards to the steep downward trend, we have to, I hate to say, you know, negate our classification numbers. We have to rely on our classification numbers. That's just how it is. Seems like the manti specifically this year was really hard to classify. To put in perspective, one of the main areas I survey, I went in the end of November during the rut when we usually survey, and counted 50 deer, went back in January, and there's 320. And so it was a hard year to get bucks during the rut when they were, because everything was still up on the mountain at high elevation. With that said, we have to rely on those numbers, and I get that. The other thing I'll say is our survival rates are exceptional this year. As far as a yearling crop of bucks coming in, our fawn survival is currently at 86% over the Wasatch Manti complex, and we haven't had a single fawn mortality on the South Manti. So I would expect a lot of forkies to come into the harvest pool this fall, and hopefully whatever issues we're having, that'll help, you know, make up for that.
So given the difficulty in classifying this year, this past fall, what's the potential that this low buck-to-doe ratio is an anomaly?
I think there's a strong potential it's an anomaly. Yeah.
And last year it was a little higher. It was 15.6 or for 2016. Did we have similar difficulties in classifying or
last year? By anomaly, I mean, it was just harder to find bucks when I think they were actually there, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thanks.
Additional comments, Mike?
So when I look at the recommendation by SFW on the Pine Valley deer and the Southwest Desert deer, I could not support the recommendation by them. Both of those are the ones over by 25% over their buck-to-doe ratio, then the ones over about 12-14% over its buck-to-doe ratio. And the biologists are only asking for a 5% increase, which seems very negligible. So, in fact, almost too low of an increase for the number of bucks on that unit. So I don't think that there's a reason to address that in my mind.
Thanks, Mike.
I would agree with that.
Okay, any additional comments? If not, do we have a motion?
Well, I have pause with that East Canyon unit still. And I'd probably recommend an increase of only about of 700 rather than 1,700. Where that unit has lost, you know, 25% of its deer herd overall, and then see how these hunts play out and kind of go from there. That would be kind of my gut reaction on that.
So, Mike, this is Dan Potts again. So, are you basing that on the crowding of hunters or biologically?
Both in my mind and the way it's been explained to me, which I think Kobe did a great job with. I think that putting 1,700 more hunters in an area that has limited access could be a difficult problem. But when I looked at the overall population gone down from 18,000 to 14,000, that's a heavy decrease, and then couple that with the decrease in the buck to doe ratio. I don't know that, and that buck to doe ratio might be an anomaly like they see on the manti, because the whole state was kind of in that same situation. But so I'd make a recommendation that we approve the. I'll just do the one unit. I'll do the Chalk Creek East Canyon Morgan South Ridge unit at 8,000 permits and not 9,000 permits.
Okay, so your proposal is for the East Canyon to change the proposal from Could you restate that, Mike? Just want to make sure I understand it.
Reduce the division's recommendation on that 456 units from 9,000 to 8,000 recommended.
Okay, got that? Go ahead, Ken. Any comment on that, or are you seconding? You second? Okay, Ken seconds. Okay, any additional discussion on that?
Personally, I'm against that, Mike, and that's, I mean, we don't manage to population size. We manage to buck-to-doe ratio, and I think there's a lot of lost opportunity in that unit. We know that when bucks start getting older, we're losing 20% a year to mortality, and so we're just squandering opportunity if we don't take advantage of those males.
Any other comments on that before we vote? Okay.
Well, one comment, you know, and I agree with Mike because I hunt that unit, but primarily just because of the private property issues, you know, we just can't seem to get to them. It seems like we're going to control this thing. We got to control the reproductive end and not the buck end. I get it, but.
So, Kirby, could you answer, these new permits, a lot of them are at a different time of year, is that correct? So it's not going to be hunters on top of each other. It's going to be when the animals move on to winter range or closer to winter range?
It'll actually be an earlier hunt, okay. Brock. But yes, it'll be earlier in October at a different time. And around that time in October, bucks, deer especially, are moving kind of all over. So I don't know what the answer is here. I understand both sides. Great discussion.
Okay, any additional comments before we take a vote on that particular amendment? Is everybody clear on it? All right, all in favor?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All against? So that motion passes, 5-4, 4 against.
I'd like to also make a motion just on the Central Mountains Manti San Rafael. SFW requested 250 deer tags be cut. I would like to propose that we cut it by 200 tags.
And that was the Manti, Ken?
And that's the Manti San Rafael.
Manti San Rafael. Cut it by 200 tags.
Okay. By 200 tags.
Okay, do we have a second for that motion? Ben? Ben seconds. Okay, any discussion on that before we vote? Go ahead, Mike.
This is where I'll agree with Brock. I think that, I mean, we just heard from the biologist that he feels the deer are there. He feels that there's a reason to maintain that permit level. And if we're worried about our kids hunting, you know, that's 250 or 200 tags gone away from them, so I'd be against that proposal.
Okay, any additional discussion? Ben?
Yeah, the reason I support that, I'm just looking at these numbers and this downtrend scares the heck out of me. I mean, in from 2015 to 2017, we went from 23.4 to 15.6 to 13.3, and the three-year average, yeah, we're still at the top end of the objective, but that trend scares me. I'd like to see a cut there just to try to curb that trend before we get ourselves into trouble in that unit. And it is very possible that those deer are there, and if so, great. We'll see that in the numbers likely next year, but I'd rather be cautious on this one.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Yeah, I'm worried about an overkill.
Okay. Any additional discussion before we vote? Okay, great. Does everybody understand the proposal? Or the motion, excuse me. All right.
Deb, did you get that?
Okay, good. Glad you asked. So the motion was that we reduce the Central Mountains Manti San Rafael General Deer Season permits by 200 permits. 200.
So from 8,800 to 8,600.
Correct. Okay. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. All against?
I'm tossed here.
Okay, well, it's a tie.
I haven't decided yet.
So Brock, I'll give you the
I understand
option.
Both arguments, and I kind of want to abstain because this is the unit I hunt, but...
So, Brock, I'll give you the opportunity.
I'm probably... in favor of this proposal, because I think Rusty's right. I think the numbers are probably an anomaly, but we have to go by the numbers and manage to the plan. So that trend scares me too, Ben. And so,
So you're a four.
I am for the decrease, yes.
Okay, so that motion passes 5-4. Okay, any additional motions? Ben.
Back to the SFW recommendations. I agree with Mike on the Pine Valley and the Southwest Desert. I don't understand where the recommendations are coming from to keep those permits the same. Those numbers are way over objective, and there's no reason to keep those numbers the same. I agree with the increase there. Moving on to the elk desires, the Fish Lake unit, I could see some merit. We're right at the, let's see, let me get back to the right page here.
We're over.
We're right at the top of the objective, because the objective is a half-year objective. I get that that is printed as a 5.75, but in the plan it's written as a 5.5 to 6. So we're right there at the top of the objective, and I could support them keeping those permit numbers the same. So that would be my motion, is to keep those permit numbers on the Fish Lake Elk unit same as 2017.
Can I add to that? I also support SFW's recommendation to not increase Fish Lake for elk. Ever since they paved that Gooseberry Road, it cut that range right in half. And I have a lot of anecdotal evidence. I also hunt it, every inch of it. And I support SFW's recommendation not to increase it.
Is that a second?
Second.
Okay, so Ben, I want to make sure I've got your... which unit you're referring to here? So,
Total Fish Lake, Thousand Lake, Elk.
So just the one unit?
Yeah.
Okay. So your motion is to keep the Plateau Fish Lake, Thousand Lakes, 2018 permit numbers the same as 2017 for limited entry elk.
Yep.
Okay. And we've got a second over here. Okay. Wait. Any discussion on that before we vote?
Is it? Deb, do you have that?
Yeah. Okay, excellent. Okay, all in favor?
Well, I have one comment here. I mean, I guess I'm gonna side with Kobe. If we have opportunity there that we're not using, then, again, elk and deer are very similar, and that's when they get old. We have really high mortality in those bulls that are over 7 or 8 years old, 25% a year natural mortality that we're just squandering if we don't use them.
Okay. Thanks, Brock. Okay, let's take a vote. All in favor of that proposal, or that motion? All opposed? Okay, so we got a tie again, Dan.
Sorry. No, I'm in the same situation he is. Hate to be
the tiebreaker here, dude.
Well, Dan, I'll tell you what. I'll give you an opportunity to take a vote, and if not, I'll go ahead and break the tie.
Let's do that. I'd just as soon not weigh in on that particular one.
Okay. On that one, I'm going to vote to keep the tags the same as 2017. So that motion passes. All right. Moving on.
Ben, I've got one more, Mr. Chairman, but if you've got one, go ahead.
I have one more, too. The comment was made, there were two comments. The other one was no tag increase on Wasatch for sheep due to sort of the speculation of a sportsman's tag or the instability of it. So I guess my motion would be that there's no tag increase for sheep on the Wasatch.
That's the same one I had in my notes to address. I'm not ready to make a motion or a second on that, but I'd like to hear Kobe's perspective on that, or the local biologist, whatever's more appropriate.
Before we do, can we just see if we have a second on that?
Sure.
Move it forward. Do we have a second on that motion? Does everybody understand the motion? Could you repeat that, just to make sure we understand it? To not increase
Wasatch for sheep.
Okay, so we're...
I'll second it.
Okay, and Ken, second. So any discussion on that? Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, whoever would be most appropriate to address those concerns on that unit, the Wasatch bighorn sheep. It looks like the recommendation is going from 2 to 3 permits, so an increase in 1 permit. The ask is to keep it the same as last year. I'd like to hear the biologist's perspective. Thanks, Dale.
Well, what we did this year is we combined the Wasatch with the Abenaquin, and we looked at what available sheep we had, and we want to make it so that these sheep continue down the road so that we can have a hunt. You know, we don't want to eliminate them all in 1 year. So with what our aerial flights have shown us, that we can probably maintain this. I would recommend if you do want to cut the permits back from 3 to 1, you might want to go to 2, since we did add the Abenaquin unit, which was a separate unit last year. So, but I think these sheep hunters, they know where the big rams are, and they target those big rams. So they're going to be moving around on that whole unit, taking advantage of those sheep. So I don't think they're all going to be taken right off the Wasatch Front.
So if I understand the historical context, then we merged 2 units,
right?
The Wasatch and the Abenaquin?
Yeah, with the Abenaquin.
And the Nebo?
And the Nebo and the Wasatch are all combined into one.
How many permits did they have?
We combined the Wasatch and the Nebo a couple of years ago, and we had 1 permit available. But with what sheep we have there, we can probably increase 1 and then add the Abenaquin onto that. And they said that they could take 1 to 2 on an annual basis out there. So we kind of split it and said instead of going to 4, we would manage it 3.
Did the Abenaquin unit have a hunt last year?
Yeah, they had a hunt on the Abenaquin last year, yeah.
With 1 tag last year?
1 tag.
Okay.
Two tags on the Abenaquin? He's... Two tags on the Abenaquin,
yeah. Since I don't manage that unit.
Yeah.
With that historical context, I don't know that I necessarily see an increase here, and I think I would be inclined to support the DWR's proposal on this.
And we're really conservative when it comes to sheep, so.
Yeah.
Really quick, Dale.
Thanks, Dale.
Do you know if the sheep that are on the Abenaquin, were they transplanted out of the North Slope? Are they Californias or are they Rockies?
They're not Californias. They're
Rockies, right?
They're Rockies, yeah.
Montana.
Okay, great. Any additional discussion on that motion? Does everybody understand the motion?
Can you repeat the motion?
Sure. So the motion is on the Central Mountains, Nebo Wasatch Mountains, Bighorn Sheep Unit, Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep, to keep the numbers at 2017 permit levels and not to do an increase. And to be clear, 2017 there were 2 tags. In 2018 the recommendation is 3 tags.
3 tags with an additional unit added.
Correct. Okay. Let's take a vote. All in favor of that motion? You seconded, didn't you?
I seconded it, but I'm changing.
Oh, okay. I got you. I'm just making sure. Okay. 1 up. All opposed. Okay, that motion fails, 8-1. Okay, any additional motions? Hello, Mike?
I make the motion that we approve the additional or the balance of the permits as presented.
All right, thank you, Mike.
And I'll second that.
Okay, Dan seconds. Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? Okay, that passes unanimously. Thank you. All right. Go ahead and move on to the next item, antlerless permit recommendations. I think this says Kobe Jones. I haven't seen that name tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like I got lucky with the last presentation and nobody could actually see the screen. So with this one and no sun, it might be a little rougher.
Might have to give us a second. It's warming up again.
You got this, Kobe.
Thanks, man.
Okay, you're good.
Gee, Scott, that's worse than it was before. It's going to get brighter? Is that it, for real? All right, here we go. Okay, so here are the 2018 Antlerless recommendations. And starting off with deer. Somebody, when I presented this last time, somebody asked if that's how we counted deer. To a division employee, that's four. All right, again, just reiterating fawn production trends. You know, we like this number to be, again, at about 60. On the left there are fawns per 100 does, and then over the years. And we've been up and down, but always hovered right around that 60. And more recently, we've dropped just below and maintained the last couple years. On our statewide deer survival rates, just as a reminder that this data and this graph, this steep decline that you're seeing, this is a year old. So this represents winter of 2016-17, not this year. And you can see that that drop in fawn survival from that more harsh winter that we had last year. And also a drop in adult survival as well, but dropping below 80%. So on the left, percent survival, and on the bottom across there, the years. The statewide deer population objective is 453,000, the line across the top. It looks like we had a peak a couple years ago. We've grown a lot of deer in the state. You know, what I don't want to take away from this graph, have everybody take away, is that it's down. What I want to take a look at is we're a long ways up from 240 in 94. And we've grown a lot of deer. We're doing a lot of good work, a lot of good habitat work, a lot of good predator control, a lot of good work in the right areas, and we've grown a lot of deer in the state, and that's a good thing. This year, the modeled population, about 363,000. You know, one more thing before we move on is that, you know, something somebody said to me one time was that all models are wrong. Remember, this is a modeled population. All models are wrong. Some models are useful. So when we look at this, don't hang your hat on that number. You know, we're not plus or minus 10 deer from 363,650. But it is an indication of what's going on or trend over time. Here's a look at the recommended antlerless draw permits from 2010 over 2018. So there's a period of time just after 2010 where we cut out a lot of antlerless permits. And when we did that, we didn't have the population we have now, but also we weren't able to address a lot of the conflict that we have. There are a couple reasons for antlerless deer permits. Antlerless deer permits or antlerless deer hunts are designed to address deer population health. That's one of the things that we look to address. We take better metrics on deer now than we ever have. We monitor deer closely every winter. We catch deer. We look at body condition, and we can see the effects of density on those populations. Whereas before we would monitor habitat and guess what the effects were on the deer, now we're actually able to monitor the deer and see what the deer look like. So that's one reason. Address deer population health. Another reason is depredation. So when we have depredation issues or areas of high conflict, we use these hunts to provide public opportunity to resolve those. So it's always better when we can allow the public to hunt and harvest these animals than it is for the division to go and remove the animals or for the landowner to have to remove all of these animals. And the final reason is to address rangeland concerns. When we monitor the habitat and realize that we're in an area where we're having problems or we see a downward trend in our ranges, we can address those with antlerless hunts. So the current year's recommendation is 1,955 antlerless deer permits across the state. This chart represents the units. The units in green are new units, and then any any green to the, or any green is also would represent an increase in numbers. So on the Chalk Creek and East Canyon, previously we didn't have any outdoors hunts there, but there's, we have the ability in these areas to offer some public opportunity to take care of some depredation issues, and that's what we would like to do. So we're recommending 250 and 200 permits there. In the southeast region, on the 9 mile, and that's actually broken up into two different units. One is in the Green River Valley, and it's to address depredation issues down there in the valley, and the other one is right around the town of Price. So I think that maybe the, just putting the whole unit up there might be misleading, but analyst permits are they're targeted areas of conflict. On the San Juan Abajo, that's actually the boundary is the city limits for the town of Monticello. It's an archery hunt, and it's to reduce conflict there. And in the central region, the Wasatch Mountain West, we had a fire up Sheep Creek, which is winter range, and we want to try to reduce numbers there to help that recover. Winter range doesn't recover the same as summer range, and so we need to back off there to allow the browse to come back. And then on the Oker Stansberries, where we have some depredation conflicts and some range issues there as well, we're recommending 50. Recommending a decrease in antlers permits on the Monroe and the Panguitch Lake and the Plateau Boulder. And then an increase in antlers permits on the Pine Valley. And this is to address depredation issues around the town of New Harmony and offer the public the ability to harvest those animals there. In the decreasing areas, we either don't have the concerns of deer population health or the conflict. We don't have the conflict there as much this year. And then on the Southwest Desert, this is out by the town of Garrison, which is a large draw for those animals. We want to offer the public some opportunity out there to help mitigate the depredating deer out there. An antlerless elk. The statewide population trends. On the left is the number of elk there, and then across the bottom are the years. The population objective for the state is right there at 78,000, so almost 80,000 elk. And in conjunction, we were growing elk consistently in the state of Utah. And then when we rewrote this last elk plan, we got a lot of new tools to address population issues. A lot of the tools that came along with the new statewide plan, private lands permits, things of that nature, they work best on years when we have a lot of conflict. And we just heard Jason at the beginning give a presentation on we didn't have a lot of conflict this year with elk. And we were catching elk in January at, how high were we, Kent, in January when we were catching elk? By Kern Creek Reservoir? Yeah, over 8,000 feet, 9,000 feet. We had elk at the tops of the mountains, and our elk hunts are targeted around those. And that's the reason why we grew some elk this year. If you look at antlerless elk permits, trend over time, we hit a peak in 2013 on those. And what we realized is that we also hit a peak in population there. And we realized that throwing more permits at this was not providing a good experience for our sportsmen. And it also wasn't helping us manage these populations. We weren't getting a good return on our investment. We would watch harvest rates go down and decline. And elk are smart. We've learned a lot about elk and how they avoid pressure. So in the final there, you'll see we're recommending... I recommended a decrease in permits over time. This year is a slight increase from 9,800. We're recommending to 10,090. But the addition there on top of that is the private lands only permits. And this permit really gives a private landowner a tool to help address conflict. They've been received very well. And the success rates, again, vary depending upon the conflict. This year, the success rates weren't very high. Last year, the success rates were almost double. They were double what they were this last year. In 2016, they were double what they were in 2017 for success. So here's a look at what those public draw permits look like by unit. On the very left hand of the chart, you have the unit, and then the population objective, the population estimate, what last year's permits were, and what this year's permits are. So recommending an increase on the cash, Morgan South Ridge, East Canyon, Camas, for a total small increase on the overall units in the northern region. This is the only region in the state where we are over as a region, and we're over quite a ways here. I think it's important to note here that a lot of these units are dominated by private land. It's difficult to obtain the harvest. And the other thing is, we don't have a lot of the conflict because a lot of these landowners want these animals. Now, that being said, we work hard to manage to these objectives and are always trying to think of new and innovative ways to obtain the harvest that we need. We work with our CWMUs, our private landowners, but this region does present some challenges in that aspect. We're recommending some new hunts on the cache, Richmond Hyde Park, the Cache Ridge, and the North Slope Summit. In the central region, we're recommending an increase in permits there on the Nebo. We're recommending a very slight increase on Wasatch Mountains West. And that's all. On the South Slope Diamond Mountain, we're below the population objective. We're recommending a decrease there. On the Book Cliffs, again, below the population objective, recommending a decrease there. 9 Mile Anthro, a slight increase. The southeastern region, on the San Rafael, we're recommending an increase there. There aren't a lot of elk out on the San Rafael in this unit, but there are a few. We used to use antlerless control, and we're recommending to take this one out of antlerless control, and the reason was because of the confusion. They would buy these permits, and they were only good for the San Rafael portion of the unit, and then we would find individuals hunting up on the mountain with an antlerless control permit. So we're just putting the tags into the public draw and pulling that out of antlerless control. On Los Alamos, we're over the objective there and recommending an increase. And the San Juan, we're at the objective there, and that number will help us manage to that population objective. On Central Mountains Manti, we know with this number, we'll grow elk, but we're a ways below the objective, and we're okay with that. So recommending 820. In the southern region, the Southwest Desert, this one has been increased a lot over the years, and we're working hard to manage this population objective. And 400 should get us into the objective this year. On the Fillmore, I'm recommending an increase there. The Monroe, a very slight increase. Mount Dutton, recommending a decrease within the objective there. Fish Lake, a decrease. And on the Panguitch Lake, an increase. On the Zion, a decrease. In the Pine Valley, a decrease. New hunts in the southern region. There's a new hunt, Monroe Rock Springs, and this is to address some aspen regeneration issues on that mountain. So antlerless elk over-the-counter permits. Just a reminder that we do sell antlerless elk control permits where appropriate, and this is if you have a buck or bull tag for that unit in areas where we want antlerless elk control, you can buy one of these permits. And it overlaps the boundary and the time of your other permit. And as I mentioned before, the private lands only permits. These are permits that are valid on private property only from August 1st to January 31st. So last year, antlerless elk control permits were available on 12 units, and this year we're only recommending 10. Again, we removed removed two of those units. We removed the San Rafael and removed the... it's in the southeast region again. It just slipped my mind. I'm sorry. Last year on antler cell control permits, harvest success was lower, and that's because we just didn't have the conflict. Private lands only permits, we sold about 3,100 of these with 750 elk harvested, 715 elk harvested. This is what this year's private lands only permits recommendations look like by unit. This is a summary. We're providing tools to manage elk better by recommending public draw permits, private lands only permits, and antler cell control permits on units where it's beneficial. For pronghorn, left is the number of permits we've recommended historically and then the years across the bottom. In 2018, we're recommending a slight overall, an increase of 10 permits for doe pronghorn across the state. A reduction on the box elder and Cache Morgan South Ridge and on the Parker Mountain, or the Plateau Parker Mountain. On the San Rafael, we've had a population really, really increase on there, on us there, and a lot of opportunity can provide some opportunity to the public and address some depredation issues as well. A decrease on the Southwest Desert in Milford Flat and an increase on the Fillmore Oak Creek. And that, it's not an increase, that's a new hunt there. Antlerless moose. We've done some pretty good research in the state lately on moose. It's had some exciting results. As we look at moose and the history of moose in the state of Utah, moose, we haven't had moose here for a long time. We didn't start hunting moose more. They came in the state, we started hunting them more recently. But during the time that we've had them here, we've had a couple pretty good crashes. They'll hit a peak. And then crash. And what we've learned is they are definitely density dependent. So our antlerless moose permits are try to help soften those peaks and provide a more stable population over time to allow that harvest to happen by us and not lose those animals to nature. Recommending a very small increase on the Ogden. And then North Slope, as we looked at the North Slope this year, we had a really, really poor body condition on moose when we caught up there and realized that we would like to try to get out ahead of that and harvest some of those animals before we have a crash. And thank you. If that'll take any questions.
Thanks, Kobe. Any questions from the RAC?
So I'd asked Kobe about the maps for some of those new antlerless deer units, and I guess he
I have them, George.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, they're. I just put them at the end of the presentation because I don't know that everybody's interested in seeing every one. So if there's specific units that we're interested in or would like to see,
yeah, that Wasatch West unit. If we could take a look at that one.
Okay, there he is.
And so that one, just a general boundary on that one. That one goes west of Sheep Creek Road up to Teton Mountain, and then back down one of our trail systems down to Highway 6, right? Is that kind of the general location on that one?
Yes. Dale, do you have anything else to say on that boundary?
Just to give some orientation on that one.
Putting a boundary together was kind of difficult. We wanted to target Lower Sheep Creek for this doe hunt. We have for the last 10 years in our study plots that we go out in the spring, we look at the browse, mostly sagebrush, and our sagebrush is getting extremely hedged, which means that it's utilized to its maximum by deer. Also, this last summer, we lost 1,500 acres of sagebrush in a fire, which we have reseeded. But to kind of help the browse in that area, we'd like to try to reduce some does for a few years and see what, if we get any regrowth with our sagebrush. So basically, we're going from on the east, you're going up Tie Fork, hit the main road there and follow that to Unicorn Ridge. Then you're going to follow it out on the Teton Mountain Road, and then there's a trail that goes from Teton Mountain Road to the south, and that'll take you back to Highway 6. Most of the hunting, I think, is going to be done in Lower Sheep Creek. To the west is mostly real thick cedars, so I don't think the hunters are going to get there, but that's what I'm trying to do. Do you have any questions?
All right, thanks, Dale. Appreciate it. Any other questions from the rack?
Yeah, cool question.
Go ahead.
You mentioned about the using an increase in elk antlers as a tool on private lands to help push some of those elk back onto public lands so the public have access to it. I don't have a problem with that increase at all, actually, because I think it is a useful, important tool. But what is the division's efforts to increase block management and walk-in access on private, so public onto private, as opposed to always going through a CWMU program? I mean, is this down the line in the works? Because there's a lot of no trespassing signs out there, and people, but with GPS technology, with Onyx Maps, you can get a hold of a landowner, and landowners, some of them want to sell a tag. Some of them, you want to go hunt that piece of ground? Have at it. So how do you, let's use the tool, but let's also give the public a chance to get some of it, because you talked about hunter satisfaction. Who's the hunters that are satisfied with these private land hunts?
Yeah, that's a really good point. They're not for everybody, but I think you mentioned some of the best things that you can do with them, and that is, again, with Onyx Maps and GPS technology, if you know of a landowner is having some problems, call him up and ask him. The landowners, a lot of times, have instigated and called themselves. I know there's some landowners out west, and when we implemented this out west, they were just letting anybody on. You want to come hunt an elk? Come hunt an elk. I don't want them on my property. I don't need them on my range. And I know it's not that way everywhere. You know, other landowners have looked at this as a way to benefit financially, which, again, can be good. When elk are looked at as a positive thing instead of a detriment all the time, they said, yeah, you can come hunt. It's so much money, whatever that is. And the division, yeah, we do work on walk-in access. We do work on these things. The truth is, the amount of money we can offer often is far less than what a hunter can offer for that access. CWMUs shouldn't be the only tool, but they still are a great tool where we get a large percentage of those antlers permits.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, any other questions from the rack? All right, great. Do we have any questions from the public? Okay, we'll go right into our comments section. And all I've got here is one card, Chris Carling.
Thank you again, Chris Carling with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, and SFW fully supports the division's recommendations on antlerless permits as presented. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, any additional comments from the public? Anybody we miss? Okay, great. I'll take it back to the rack for any comments or motions. Dan?
Yeah, I'm not going to make a motion, but I want to make a statement that I think these landowner permits are going to work out. Of course, this last year we had all that, you know, those critters were way, way up high, so they didn't come down, elk especially, right? And so that really hurt us, but I think we just need to be patient with that. I think it'll really pay big dividends in the long run, and I'm extremely optimistic.
Thanks, Sam. Do you have any questions or comments? Excuse me.
I just have another comment, just to be on the record in terms of the Forest Service. We are concerned with the elk population on Nebo. We want to avert any future livestock elk issues up there. So as quickly as we can get to population objectives for us, the better.
George.
I didn't ask a question, but Covey, I have a question. Is there any evidence that some of these deer herds are reaching capacity? I mean, is condition declining in any of these herds where we could be harvesting females that are going to die anyway, lower survival rates kind of thing?
Good question, Brock. Yeah, we've seen declining body condition as populations have increased. And antlerless deer harvest, the truth, I mean, frankly, the antlerless deer harvest is a hard sell to our public. You know, when we look at surrounding states, Colorado harvests a lot of antlerless deer. Other states harvest a lot of antlerless deer. And in Utah, we kind of have the sacred doe philosophy. And we're working to target areas where we feel like we can do better. But yeah, Brock, yeah, we've definitely seen areas where we have declining body condition scores, which we know is it's density dependent. We probably have more animals on the landscape than we should, and there are places and times where we'll lose those to Mother Nature instead of providing that hunter opportunity. We're working hard, I think, to get some education out on that and work through that and say, hey, as we start to see these declining trends, let's harvest these animals before we have a poor adult survival. And it's I think it's working. I think it's becoming more accepted. And I think as we continue the research, it'll even get better. But no, Brock, I actually appreciate you asking that question. We could definitely be harvesting more antlerless deer than we are.
And I would just add to that, Brock, that sometimes carrying capacity and population objective are not the same thing and can cause some conflict in management.
Yes. Well, I'm just thinking of youth. I would love if a youth could harvest a male or a female.
Absolutely.
On their tag.
Yep, absolutely. And I know we talked about that a lot during the Mule Deer Committee, setting population objectives and how that correlated to a carrying capacity. And it's really a tough juggling act, so sometimes I think you might see in small areas especially, you know, think of Panguitch, where you've got smaller areas where there's a lot of deer causing a lot of problems with browse and their habitat, but they're not necessarily overpopulation objective in the bigger unit. So, but I think the division's done a good job of looking at some of that and what can we do. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
And maybe I don't want to give it this too far off track here, but and stop me if I am. So with an elk, if a cow elk tag, if you have an archery tag in the same unit area, you can shoot that cow during your archery hunt. Is that the same with doe deer? Not the same.
Okay. Okay, RAC members, do we have a motion? Anybody?
I'll make a motion that we accept the division's proposal on the antlerless permits.
All right, thanks, Ken. Do we have a second? Ben seconds. All right, let's take a vote. All in favor? All right, it's unanimous. Thank you. All right. 2018 CWMU antlerless permit recommendations, and it's not Kobe. Mike Wardle.
So I'm Mike Wardle, I'm Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife, and I'll be presenting on 2018 CWMU antlerless permit recommendations. So before we get started into the actual recommendations, I just want to give a brief overview of what we call the split within the CWMU program. So if you'll see look on the left side of that table, it shows the split options for buck and bull permits. And then whatever an operator chooses on that left side of the table directly correlates to how or to what their split will be for antlerless permits. So for example, if you take the 90-10 split, which is the top one there on the left for deer and elk, if an operator chooses to have the 90-10 split, which means 90% of those permits are private and 10% go to the public draw, they automatically get a 0-100% split for antlerless permits, which means that all antlerless permits for the CWMU go to the public draw. And what this creates is a great public opportunity on private land within the CWMU program. This table shows the summary of the number of permits that we're recommending for CWMU statewide. The number I want to draw your attention to is that bottom right-hand corner where it says 819. That's 819 hunters that will be given access to private land to hunt an antlerless animal. One other thing before I get into individual recommendations, what I've done is highlighted the changes, right? And so before I get into I want to talk about a few reasons why we recommend increases and why we recommend decreases on CWMUs. The biggest reason for recommending an increase on a CWMU is opportunity, right? If the resource is there, let's recommend an increase and have that opportunity utilized. And then manage to population objectives, cooperative wildlife management units. We see CWMUs as co-managers almost in some of these areas, especially in the northern region where a lot of the units, and you look at the Chalk Creek units, 96% private land, we rely on these CWMUs to help us manage to our objectives. Some of the reasons for decreasing permits is we look pretty hard at harvest success. Are the hunters actually harvesting animals on these CWMUs, or are our success rates too low? Another big thing is wildlife distribution. So CWMUs are different than our public units, right? They're limited to the private property enrolled in the CWMU, and the distribution of animals on the property plays a big role in our recommendation. So I'll now get into the actual recommendations by region. And these are renewal applications. So these CWMUs renewed their certificate of registration, and that was all passed this past fall. And these are the antlerless permit numbers that we're recommending with those CWMUs. So in the northern region, am I speaking too loud into it? Is that why it's shutting off? So in the northern region, you'll see Bear Springs. We're recommending antlerless elk permits there for the first time. We're recommending an increase in antlerless elk permits on Coldwater Ranch and East Fork Chalk Creek, and a decrease in antlerless elk permits on Ensign Ranches and Lone Tree Taylor Hollow. also recommending a decrease in antlerless elk permits on Meadow Creek, which was formerly known as Twin Peaks Goose Creek, and then recommending a decrease in doe pronghorn permits on Deseret. Here in the central region, we're recommending an increase in antlerless elk permits on Bear Mountain and 3C, and recommending pronghorn permits on the Westlake CWMU. In the northeastern region, we're recommending pronghorn permits on the Antelope Creek CWMU, and a decrease in antlerless elk permits on Little Red Creek, Moon Ranch, and Sand Creek. In the southeastern region, we're recommending decreases in antlerless elk permits on Hiawatha, Preston Nutter Ranch, Schofield Canyons, Schofield East, Soldier Summit, Spring Creek Dodge, and Summit Point, and increases in elk permits on Indian Head and Jump Creek. In the southern region, we're recommending a decrease in antlerless elk permits on the Alton CWMU. And then we also had a couple change applications. So what this is a CWMU that's currently operating within their three-year COR, and they've already had antlerless elk permit numbers approved for those 3 years, but they are requesting a change within that three-year COR. And those two come from the northern region. We're recommending increasing deer permits on the Junction Valley, and those are two doe permits. And then we're recommending decreasing permits on Rabbit Creek CWMU. They had one pronghorn permit and would like to go to zero. And that is all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Do we have any questions from RAC? No? Okay.
Question.
Oh, go ahead, Buck.
So, Mike, some of these units you're recommending a decrease of like 50%. One of them you're going from 18 to zero. Is there a corresponding decrease in the number of bull tags going to these units?
Some of them, yes. Others, it has more to do with antlerless or with animal distribution. So we have a handful of CWMUs where either the hunt is migratory, right? They wait until the cows come on during November and December, and that's when that opportunity is there. And they haven't been able, especially like this year, we're going to have a lot of low harvest rates because of the easy winter we had. But for the most part, yeah. Do you have specific questions on?
So like Summit Point, you're going from 18 cows to zero. Are they going to zero bull tags too?
No. No, and some of those could be too that we're looking at the population objective overall. So like Rabbit Creek, CWMU, for example, the pronghorn, they're below objective, and so we're pulling the antlerless permits from them.
Any additional questions? All right, I'll take it to the public. Anybody have any questions on this? Yeah, okay, I didn't think so. Move on to the comment period. I have no comment cards, so I assume there are no comments on this. Okay, great. I'll bring it back to the RAC for discussion and or a motion. Ben?
Move to approve as presented.
Thank you, Ben. Do you have a second?
Ken? I'll second it.
Okay, Ken seconds. Any other discussion? All right, all in favor? Any opposed? Okay, it passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mike. Moving on to the last item on the agenda, the poaching reported reward permit program changes. Rich Olson.
Stand up. Is it short? Okay.
Okay, we're going to make Jason's timeline, unless you guys have a lot of questions about poachers. Anyway, my name's Rick Olson. I'm the chief of law enforcement for the Division of Wildlife, and I'm here to present some changes to our poaching reported reward permits. That is one tongue twister, so say that three times and see if you make it. So throughout this presentation, I'm going to just refer to these permits as reward permits. Just remember, they're a reward for turning in a poacher, not for poaching. Okay, we've had this program. We're going to go through these items here, a little history of the program, the current rule structure, the proposal, which will consolidate several different rules into one rule, and to add bears to the program, add harvest objective cougar, and expand the program to the general season deer and elk units. And we'll modify the standards. We're recommending a little bit of modification for who qualifies for the permits and what permits are available. Okay, this program was initially created in 1996. It works in tandem with our monetary reward program. Primarily, this has been used for deer and elk on highly sought-after units. The standards for each one of these permits is found in three different rules currently: the big game rule, the cougar, and the turkey rule. So this would combine all of those into one rule, so every time we want to make a tweak to it, we don't have to do it three or four or five different times. And based on the current rule, the verbiage is just a little bit different. That was not ever by design. It's just every time you take it to a different rule, it gets tweaked a little bit unintentionally. Okay, this is just a graph showing since 96 how many of these reward permits we have given out. So you see, we're not talking about hundreds of permits. The highest we've ever given is 17 permits in that 1 year. We average about 10 a year. This is a breakdown of the permits we've issued up until now. So it's interesting that we've had cougars, the ability to give a cougar reward permit for quite a few years, but we have never issued one of those. The people choose, you always have the option to either take a monetary reward or a permit. And for some reason, the cougar poachers, or the people that turn in cougar poachers, want the money, not a permit. Okay, so who can qualify for one of these permits? First, they have to provide accurate, credible information regarding a wildlife violation. The division has to take that information to a county attorney, usually, to get a prosecution. And then the individual must totally cooperate and support through the whole process. So you can't just turn in your buddy and then decide not to testify and get your reward permit. So we define successful prosecution as either on a Class B misdemeanor, which is a lower class of crime, that you can write just a simple citation for, that will qualify, but it has to be based under a violation of Utah Code 2320 and 4, which is what we call wanton destruction of protected wildlife, which basically means you have to commit a violation and do it knowingly, intentionally, or recklessly. So if somebody just has a simple mistake that's not knowing, intentional, or reckless, that violation would not qualify the individual to receive one of these permits. Most of these are issued under the second bullet there of filing of a criminal information on a Class A or a felony. Okay, what hunts would qualify? These are all, so buck deer, bull elk, buck pronghorn, bull moose, all the male species. There would have to be at least 10 or more public draw permits on the unit, and issuing the permit could not exceed 10% of permits issued on a unit. Now, it's important to note these numbers are on top of the permit, of the total permits, so we're not taking anything away from the public. You could not get a multi-season option for some of them units that have them, and there can only be one permit per successful prosecution. Okay, the impacts on the hunter, if he turns in a poacher, they don't forfeit bonus or preference points. They don't incur any waiting periods except for the once-in-a-lifetime specie. If you draw one of these for a once-in-a-lifetime specie, you cannot put in or obtain another permit through the public draw. Now, you could draw a tag through the Expo tag program, or you could purchase a once-in-a-lifetime species on a CWMU. You can only get one poaching reward permit in a single calendar year per species. Believe it or not, we have some pretty good watchers out there. We've had a few people that have turned in multiple people for different species in 1 year. You still can only possess or use one permit for an antlered or horned animal of the same species in a single hunt year. So if you had already drawn a permit or purchased a permit, if you turned in a poacher and got one of these permits, you'd have to surrender the permit that you already have. They're non-transferable, but they could be used as part of the mentor program or the trial hunting program. And you still must possess a Utah hunting or combination license, and you have to be eligible to hunt. So if you're a past poacher on suspension, you don't get one of these. Okay, so here's the process. You would get, for once-in-a-lifetime species, you would get a permit for the male animal or hunter's choice if it's some of those, like a goat, on the same unit as the animal was illegally taken on. If that unit was not available, say we'd already issued a permit for that, or there was not at least 10 permits available on that unit, then you would get a permit for the same species, has to be a male, on the alternate unit closest in proximity to where the animal was illegally taken. So if this was a sheep poached on the Zion unit, if it qualified, you would get a Zion sheep permit. If there was not enough permits on the Zion, then you would get a sheep permit for the next closest unit that had sheep. Okay, if that the closest one wasn't available, then you can change once-in-a-lifetime specie. Again, closest in proximity to where the animal was illegally taken. If that is unavailable, then you can get a male animal on a limited entry specie on an alternate unit selected by the division. Now, we proposed these changes with all these exceptions so we didn't run into a problem. With the number of permits we've issued to date, we will never run into more than maybe option two. Okay, on the premium limited entry, it's basically the same thing. You would get a buck deer permit on the same premium limited entry unit as the illegally taken animal. If that wasn't available, the next closest one. Same thing on the limited entry deer, elk, or pronghorn. You'd get one for the same unit or the next closest. Okay, this would be new. on the general season deer or elk. The permit would have to be for a male animal of the same species on the same unit as the animal was taken. It's basically the same concept. Now, we probably won't give out a lot of these. Most likely on the units where it's fairly easy to draw, somebody would choose the monetary reward over a $40 permit. But some of the general season units are getting pretty hard to draw. Somebody may choose one of those permits if it's taken 2 or 3 years to draw that unit. Okay, on cougar, it would be basically the same thing, but there can only be one reward permit for each unit. If the animal is taken on a harvest objective unit, a permit could be issued on a limited entry unit closest to that unit. If the animal was taken on a limited entry unit, it could be on that same limited entry unit, or if that wasn't available, the next closest one. Same process with the bear. We have not had bear before. This proposal would add bear to this program with the same concept as the cougar. Okay, turkey on turkeys. This would apply to both general season and limited entry turkey units. If it was on a limited entry unit, the permit would have to be for the same limited entry area if they wanted a limited entry one, or they could choose just a general season permit for, well, that's good for the whole state. Okay, that's all I have.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the rack? Mike?
One question I have is, they did a news story a year or two ago about a guy who turned in a poacher and the division offered him money and not a permit. Does that happen at times? Or the division discretion?
Yes, once in a while. So you have to go back to that slide I had with the qualifying charges. This individual, I think we actually have one of the officers that was involved in that here, but he turned in an elk poacher that truly had made just a mistake, and so he was issued a citation but wasn't charged for the more serious wanton destruction. So he didn't qualify for the permit at that time. So we did offer a monetary reward, a pretty substantial one, but he didn't want that. Now, once in a while, we will also, on most of the serious cases, we gather the facts, we take it to a county attorney who reviews, and then they decide on what charges. Every once in a while, a county attorney will differ from our recommendation and not go with the more serious charge. In that case, the individual would not qualify for a permit at that point. Now, if the county attorney does prosecute for the more serious charge, but if we lose, he still gets his permit as long as he cooperates through the whole process.
All right, thanks, Rick. Any other questions? No? Okay, any questions from the public? Okay, I have no comment cards, so I'm assuming no public comments. Okay, bring it back to the rack for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the proposal as presented.
All right, thanks, Ken. Do we have a second? Rock seconds. Okay, all in favor? All right, passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for your time, and thanks again for attending tonight.